I'm Brooke Gladstone. Last week's grilling of Vice President-elect Mike Pence by CNN's Jake Tapper includes almost 5 minutes of Tapper trying and failing to get an answer to this.
I want to ask you about an incident on the transition today. Michael G. Flynn, the son of the future National Security Advisor, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, has been pushing a bunch of conspiracy theories, including one that ended up impacting where you're staying right now, your local pizza place, Comet Pizza. An insane lie spread online. It led a North Carolina man to barge into the restaurant with two weapons. Thankfully, no one was hurt. Now, Flynn Jr. Was on the transition team. But a source familiar with the situation tells me that he was asked to leave and that the direct order came from President-elect Trump. Tell me what happened.
Pence said Flynn Jr. was helping out around the office with administrative tasks, but didn't address the point of Tapper's question. So Tapper asked it again and again.
You're downplaying his role, but you must be aware that the transition team put in for security clearance for Michael G. Flynn, the son of Lieutenant General Flynn.
Well, I'm aware in talking to General Flynn that his son was helping with scheduling, Jake.
No, but you put in for security clearance for him.
He was helping his dad arrange for meetings and provide meetings, but that's no longer the case.
But do you need security clearance to do scheduling?
I think that's the appropriate decision for us to move forward, avoid any further distraction, and I'm very confident as we continue to build this team. Tonight you'll see the President-elect formally announce General Mattis as the new Secretary of the Department of Defense, that the American people are going to be impressed with the way that the President-elect is bringing together men and women that are make America safe again.
I want to move on to other issues, but I'm afraid I just didn't get an answer, which is, were you aware that the transition had put in for a security clearance for Michael Flynn Jr.?
You know, I've worked very closely with General Flynn. We've met on many occasions. I've never seen his son present for any of those meetings.
But you're head of the transition team, so you know who you put in for security clearances for.
Well, General Flynn did inform me that his son was helping on administrative matters. But Jake, this is all the kind of distraction that frankly, I know, with all due respect, the national media likes to go chasing after. I think what the American people are impressed by, and it's a reason why, frankly, you see public opinion on the rise about the president-elect in the last 4 weeks, is because they're seeing the kind of decisive leadership that Donald Trump is bringing to this transition. It's the kind of energetic leadership that's going to focus on the priorities of the American people, building a team, building a legislative agenda, driving our nation forward to a stronger, more prosperous America.
The last question on this, sir, and I'm sorry, you're not answering the question, which is, were you aware that the transition team had put in for a security clearance? I mean, this is a young man who had a social media profile that had all sorts of crazy conspiracy theories, that had all sorts of links and retweets with white supremacists. Were you aware that the transition put in for a security clearance for him?
Well, what I can tell you is that in talking with General Flynn today, he made me aware that his son was assisting him in scheduling
and that you'd put in for a security
meetings
clearance.
And whatever the appropriate paperwork was to assist him in that regard, Jake, I'm sure was taking place. But that's no longer the case, and your viewers and the American people can be confident that we're going to continue to drive forward. Look, this is a very challenging time for America's place in the world. It was a week ago yesterday that we saw a terrorist-inspired attack on the Ohio State campus. We're bringing together with General Mike Flynn, with KT McFarland, with a team that's going to surround them and advise this president, people that are going to set into motion, I'm confident, the policies that'll make America safe again at home and abroad.
And it was just 2 days ago that we saw somebody with a gun go to Comet Pizza because of this crazy conspiracy theory that Michael G. Flynn had been putting out there, and you guys put in for security clearance. But I will move on because I want to talk about Obamacare.
Such things in American media are wondrous rare. But this isn't the first time that Jake Tapper has distinguished himself. Bob spoke to him back in June, right after he'd had Donald Trump on his show. Tapper followed up an astonishing 23 times with Trump over his assertion that federal judge Gonzalo Curiel was incapable of treating him fairly in a lawsuit about his so-called Trump University.
But he's an American. You keep talking about
Jake.
It's a conflict of interest because of Mexico.
Are you ready?
I don't care if you criticize him. That's fine. You can criticize every decision. What I'm saying is, if you invoke his race as a reason why he can't do his job.
I think that's why he's doing it. Okay, I'm building a wall. I am going to do very well with the Hispanics, the Mexicans.
So everybody. No Mexican judge could ever be involved in a case that involves you?
He's a member of a society where, you know, very pro-Mexico, and that's fine. It's all fine. And he said, no, I won't dismiss the case, and she doesn't have to be the plaintiff.
Let me
tell you.
His heritage?
I'll tell you what it has to do.
If you are saying he can't do his job because of his race, is that not the definition of racism?
No.
It's not the first time Tapper has put Trump on the defensive. Among the stable of cable news and network interviewers, Tapper has distinguished himself by reliably asking tough, pointed questions. Getting straight answers? Well, he's in the same boat as everyone else, because the conventions of journalism, especially broadcast journalism, give politicians ample opportunity to duck and cover. So, do these conventions need to change? Jake, welcome back to On the Media.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Now, he's hard to interview, obviously. He makes unverifiable claims. He changes the subject a lot, interrupts. How do you prepare for a Trump interview?
A lot of these people are tough to interview. There's kind of a world of, all right, I will ask Senator X this question. He will dodge it. I will ask it again. He will pivot to topic Y. And then maybe if I have the fortitude to ask it a third time, I will finally get something resembling an answer. That is a general format that I'm used to. I had a lot of questions I wanted to ask Mr. Trump about trade, immigration, counterterrorism. By the time I sat down with him, there were two big stories. One was Hillary Clinton's speech attacking him and his reaction to it, and his comments about Judge Curiel. I felt like the most important question I had was whether that was not the definition of racism.
Well, you certainly hammered him with the question. And
I hate to be Trump-esque, but can I interrupt for 1 second? Yeah. I would take issue with the word hammer, because I think one of the things that works with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, too, is the tone. The persistence has to come with a certain low-key respect. It has to come in a controlled way. So it's not a hammering. It's a sweet hammering, a respectful hammering.
And this is why we have you here, because I have some questions about the journalistic convention of sweet hammering. You did say to Trump about Judge Curiel, but he's an American. He's from Indiana. You presented him with facts that undercut his entire argument such that it was. But elsewhere in this interview, and by the way, I'm talking about not just you, but all other TV interviewers, I found you tying yourself into knots by cleaving to these certain conventions that supposedly demonstrate objectivity with a capital O. For instance, and I'm going to play you some tape here, the reflex to put criticisms in other people's mouths.
Hillary Clinton said that that is a racist attack on a federal judge. Right. Paul Ryan today said he didn't care for the way that you were attacking this judge. I guess the question from the Anti-Defamation League is, even if you don't know about their endorsement, there are these groups and individuals.
I saw Netanyahu put out a statement distancing himself from you.
Well, when David Cameron said, distancing himself.
He condemned your remarks is all I'm saying.
He did. He modestly condemned them.
Jake, facts are facts. I mean, you did this fantastic takedown on your show on Trump's repulsive rumor mongering about the Clintons and the Vince Foster suicide. You called it shameful.
To be clear, the notion that this was a murder is a fiction born of delusion and untethered to reality and contradicted by evidence reviewed in at least 6 investigations, one of them by Ken Starr.
But you sit across from him and you go into the sweet hammering mode. Why is that?
Well, there are different situations. Let me also say, as a general notion, my opinions about political events of the day are not as important as the opinions of some of the people you just played me referring to, Benjamin Netanyahu, Hillary Clinton. Those are world actors, and what they say is much more important than what I say. In an interview, one of the things that is important I have learned is to make the questions and the responses the stars of the interview. If I were to, you know, be like Joseph Welch taking on Senator Joseph McCarthy, at long last, sir, then I'm making myself the center of attention. And that undercuts the journalism. what's important in the exchange is a reporter sitting in front of him, and so as not to distract from what we're talking about, which is much more important than the personal interdynamics between me and Donald Trump, respectfully saying, but is this not the definition of racism?
Now, I understand you don't want to be caught grandstanding, although I would argue that at this moment in history, a little Joseph Welch grandstanding is just what the doctor ordered. But hyper-respect allows Trump and other political interviewees to be non-responsive, to go off on tangents. When you were asking about the very constitutionality of a wholesale ban on Muslims coming to the United States, he launches into a Second Amendment rant.
In California, if a couple of people like me had guns taped to their ankle or their waist, and these two horrible people came in, you wouldn't have all the death. You wouldn't have it. So look, I'm a big believer in the Constitution, okay?
And I'm sitting there going, no, Jake, that's not what you ask them. Interrupt them and say, Mr. Trump, I'm not asking you about political correctness or the Second Amendment. I'm asking you about legal discrimination, about racial profiling, about freedom of religion, the very thing that our country was founded on, and not because Benjamin Netanyahu asked it first. Is this not the moment to let yourself be the star?
You're talking about an interview that I did back in December. It was about a 20-minute interview, and I think I did about 15 minutes just on the Muslim ban. And I'm proud of those 15 minutes. And I would point to the impact that the most recent interview had. I would point to the Speaker of the House saying that's the definition of racism 5 days later, the same exact construct that I used during the interview, and say, I think the way that I brought it and the way that I was respectful to him while also making my points and trying to interject when he tried to change the subject, yeah, I think that worked. Also, I don't want this to be the last opportunity I have to interview them because I did not grandstand.
Well, that's a key point. How much is that in the calculus of your interviewing approach is that not only do I have to do this interview, but we have to maintain access so that...
But it's not about that. The fallacy is that it's about access for access's sake. It's not. It's about access so I can continue to do the journalism I'm doing. I don't want to cut myself out of this process. I think what I'm doing has value.
Is there not an argument, I'm certainly making it, for a change in the rules of engagement? I feel, and I've said this before, like watching the UN peacekeepers try to deal with the Bosnian Serbs. All they can do is watch as bad things happen. And when you're facing a demagogue, shouldn't you be able to fire back?
I don't know what alternative you're proposing. It sounds to me like you're asking for somebody to interview Hillary Clinton or interview Donald Trump and berate them. Have some moment where it's about the interviewer.
How about you're running to be president of the United States, you've said outrageous things, and you're going to be held accountable for them. You mentioned the David Duke moment when you asked him if he would disavow the support of various white supremacists.
Well, just so you understand, I don't know anything about David Duke, okay? I don't know anything about what you're even talking about with white supremacy or white supremacists. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Did he endorse me or what's going on?
You said, well, it's the Ku Klux Klan, which I think was the right thing to say. And again, me, armchair quarterback interviewer, going, Trump, you just told me that you've never heard of former presidential candidate David Duke and the Ku Klux Klan. I don't believe that.
If you think that that was an ineffective interview, then all I can tell you is I disagree with you. I think it had an impact on the political dialogue because people at home filled in that sentence that you wish I had said. People at home did that for themselves. People at home figured out what they thought about the interview.
Fair enough, and I certainly understand that concept of the viewer filling in the blanks. The fundamental question, it's the one I began with, really, is that is this a moment in history where you sort of let a politician hang himself or not with his own words is simply not enough?
I think there are a lot of tough questions that need to be asked of Clinton and Trump. And I think the question for this media cycle is not whether or not people are being too respectful in asking them. I think they're not asking them. that to me is more troubling. Look, Donald Trump went on Fox and Friends and said Rafael Cruz, Ted Cruz's father, according to what he read in the National Enquirer, may have been involved with Lee Harvey Oswald and the Kennedy assassination. Now, the response on Fox and Friends was, oh, yeah, wow, what an outrage, or something like that. And the way it was covered over the next few hours was, you know, Trump levels charge, Cruz denies charge. That, to me, was outrageous, because that's not journalism, that's stenography. And what I thought was important was that night to go on TV and say, this is false, and it's shameful, and it's wrong. That, to me, is important, too.
This guy, by every definition, is a demagogue. He has been caught in 1,000 lies. He has said all sorts of things that are fundamentally un-American. And is this a moment when it's proper to put the sweet hammer back in the toolbox and say, Mr. Trump, what is the matter with you?
You know, Bob, you can do that, and you can say all the things you just said about Mr. Trump, things that I have not said on my show. And at the end of the election cycle, we can decide which one of us has had more of an impact on the election.
Yeah, and what if he wins?
Then the majority of the American people have voted for him. My job is not to defeat a candidate. My job is to make sure voters have facts and have as much information as I can give them. At the end of the day, if the voters of this country pick Donald Trump to be their president, that's their decision. I'm not rooting for him or against him.
I'm rooting against him in a very big way. And I said that to my audience a few weeks ago, the voters will do what the voters will do, but it can't be because we in the press didn't do enough. Do you think that's just histrionics?
I think that the press could be doing more to challenge Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, to fact check, to make it clear when outrageous things are said or lies are told, and to ask follow-up questions. I could be doing a better job, and the media could be doing a better job, but I don't think I'm not doing my job. I think I've done a pretty good work of it already.
Jake, thank you very, very much.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
Jake Tapper is host of CNN's The Lead with Jake Tapper and State of the Union.
This is an On the Media podcast extra. You can listen to the weekly hour-long show, which this week is all about propaganda, on your local public radio station or by downloading it on iTunes or wherever. Thanks for listening. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.